Hello and welcome back. So for the next session, we're going to introduce the next part of the method for developing compassion. Suppose before we go on, we did have questions at the last end of the last session, but is there anything else that might have come up in the break that you want to share or, you know, ask in the group? Okay with things so far? Great. So we're working on the compassion side, the method side of the two wings, you know, wisdom and compassion, and how are we going to develop that compassion? Because it doesn't come naturally. Well, it does come naturally, but we need to develop it. We need to, you know, work on it a little bit. And we have some really, really skillful means. We've been doing the equalizing and exchanging, which we realize that we can use at any time, you know, within the sadhana, but, you know, within our everyday life experience, really useful. And that's actually a basis for what's called the six causes and one effect, or it's sometimes called the 7 points, because it builds up the equanimity which we need as a basis. You know, if we're still really distracted by this aversion pushing people away and being attached and drawing those towards us, we're still in the confusion, you know. And it's really hard to expand the compassion when we've got that confusion. And so first, we build that base of equanimity. So you've already got that. You've got that method. And on that basis, we start with the six causes, first of all. And the first cause is to recognize all the beings as our mothers. I'll go through the 6 points now and seventh the effect, and then we'll be concentrating mainly on the first two or three really. So the first cause for the effect that we want of great compassion is recognizing all sentient beings as being our, or having been, our mothers. And then the second point is we become mindful of their kindness. We recollect that kindness, not just in this life, but in all lives. And having recollected the kindness, we go to the third point, which is wanting to repay their kindness, repaying their kindness. Very logical steps, these. And then that leads us on to generating love, you know. And generating love is the cause of bodhicitta. So very much this encompasses the equalizing and exchanging method. So it is within the 7 points. And then fifth point is generating, we've generated love, but now we need something a little bit more active, so we generate compassion. And we start to think of not just love to ourselves and compassion to ourselves, we start to expand that to all beings. The next point, the sixth point, is having done that, we expand even that compassion into what's called great compassion. And great compassion is thinking of every single sentient being and not excluding one. Not excluding one. And we can say, expand that to this earth cycle, this you know, planet system that we're in, but you know, they had a much bigger minds than this, in Buddhism. They just saw the possibility of all realms, all forms of sentient beings, living beings. Isn't that amazing? You know, they know much more than their own country or area in those days. And we now know that there's great possibilities, that there are a lot of realms. And let's go touch on quantum here, you know, all going on, maybe at the same time. We have no idea what is out there, but the possibilities are definitely there, that there's lots and lots of life forms. So we don't restrict it just to the life forms on this planet. It becomes huge. It encompasses every single sentient being. So that's the great compassion. And that great compassion has got a lot of energy. And we talked about that yesterday. You know, it really, you know, it's the vitality of the Mahayana tradition. And certainly the vitality of the tantras and your practice. So those are the six causes. Now we step onto the bodhisattva path and travel that path before we become fully enlightened. We have the opportunity to do a lot of activities, you know, bodhisattva activities with this great compassion. So we're really useful. And that's why Chenrezig, the bodhisattva Chenrezig, vowed never to leave cyclic existence until every single living being had reached enlightenment. You know, it's an amazing, huge wish, but not just a wish. This is activity, you know, actually working towards all those beings becoming enlightened. And so the effect, the seventh, is the effect is having this bodhicitta that we travel with right on the way up to enlightenment. And if we think again of Chenrezig, you know, he's a perfect example of this, because Chenrezig's compassion was so vast, you know, that two arms weren't enough. And when he'd almost given, and he'd made this vow, I'm not going to leave cyclic existence until everybody, you know, has reached enlightenment. I'm not going to abandon anybody in this suffering. He actually, at one point, found it unbearable, because as many people as were being helped with this wonderful compassion, I'm not talking about this personal being going out, you know, but this energy of compassion generated, manifesting, there were still all these sentient beings still suffering, piling on, you know. And that's when his heart broke almost, and the story goes that he split into pieces, and Amitabha, seeing that, realized, you know, why, you know, it was from his great compassion, and so put those pieces together, and we get the thousand arm Chenrezig of Lakshvara. So it's a wonderful story, but it's actually telling us something that, you know, if you think of it in an energy level, as your compassion gets larger and expands and becomes boundless, it can manifest in so many ways. That's the power of it. Yeah. To be of help to all sentient beings. And it can, that happens at every level. Once we step onto the bodhisattva path, and we begin to do that by our practice and opening the doors of Tantra and our practice in Sutra, developing compassion, these are all steps of the bodhisattva path, then we have the ability to really start to help beings in a meaningful way. And they say there's three types of bodhicitta, and so we could the three kinds are the shepherd analogies, the shepherd, the boatman, and the king. So we can really see Chenrezig as the shepherd, because he wasn't going to go before the beings to enlightenment, and he didn't want to be in the boat with them either, together, and we all get to enlightenment together. The way the path he took was the shepherd. I'm going to make sure all those sentient beings are safe in the fold of enlightenment before I take enlightenment. Okay, so I think these are very nice analogies to help us understand the energy of compassion and its power. You know, we need the wisdom wing, but as I said before, I'm going to let the Geshe's and the Rinpoche's teach you all that, you know. But we can really, really work on this method side, the compassion side. We work a lot, it works along together, you know. We need those two wings to fly to enlightenment. I think the thing with the bodhicitta is, you know, the strong intention. I think that's when the change comes. There's a sort of an intensifying of the energy. And this is developed by first starting to recognize all sentient beings as being our mother. And let's just start with that first point. How do we feel about that? So I think in the East it was they quite, because you could be brought up by an auntie, an uncle, you know, any relation, you maybe didn't have the problems that we in the West have with mother. So some people have big problems with mother, and the minute you say recognize all beings as your mother, there's a huge aversion comes up because you've had such terrible experiences of mother, you know. But we've got to think bigger than that, you know, really keep thinking of the bigger picture. So we'll drop that story, you know, that's something that will get sorted along the path. And try to look at it as a technique. Well, why is that going to help? You know, why is that going to be useful for me? And you only take it on board if it is useful. And they often say, if you really, really do have a struggle with the mother image connection, you can say all beings have been kind and they have shown me kindness. They've helped me in some way. Well, we were talking about that earlier, the interdependence. If we just think of our interdependence, we can start to realize that we are not an island, and actually there's not a moment of the day that isn't affected by the fact that, you know, there's other beings. We need them for all our physical well-being. We need them for the loving kindness they give us. We need them for our daily needs. It goes on and on, doesn't it? So we can really start to think about all the loving care. And we expand it from this one life to, in this system, we have to accept rebirth by the time we've got this far on the path. That, you know, this has gone on many, many times, and since beginningless time. So if every being has had a connection to us, then at some time, every being has been helpful to us, has been kind to us, and been like a mother, you know, and in all sorts of forms. And also you can then think about in the animal realm here, you know, on this planet. Look at the loving kindness of the mother, you know, that's rearing its young. It's incredible. It's incredible. And the lengths they go to. So I think we've got to think of this mother loving kindness rather than personalizing it with our own experience of mother, but just generally, the loving kindness of the mother is probably the greatest example we have of selfless love, isn't it? You know, the mother will jump into a vat of boiling oil if her baby's fallen in there. There'll be no question. There'll be absolutely no question. But if we were just a friend or just a stranger and saw a baby falling into the vat of oil, we'd want to help, wouldn't we? Yeah. But we might not just jump in straight away because, you know, little old self would just pop its head up and think, oh, well, am I going to be safe? Am I going to really be able to do this? Something would come in the way, something. But not for the mother, not for mother love. There's, you know, it's completely selfless. So I think that's the part we've got to focus on with mother love. And if we can't do that and it really becomes an obstacle, then we think of just the fact that every single sentient being cares, has cared for us at some point in all these billions and trillions of endless, beginningless lives. So that's the sort of meditations, the form of the meditations, and you get them from all different teachers in different forms. But that's the work in progress. I think very much, you know, that in the text they say, you know, to be like a mother who would jump into the vat of oil to save that baby without a second thought. It's huge, and you think there's no way I can do that for every single sentient being. But you know, you just do it a little bit at a time, a little bit at a time. Don't give up on them. The next point is being mindful of their kindness, which is really encompassed in what we've been saying. So being aware of that and recollecting it. So that's really recollecting our interdependence and knowing with all confidence and, you know, assurance that we are not on our own. We do not exist in some sort of bubble and self-existing, independent. It just isn't real. It just isn't real. So we become mindful of that kindness and we expand it to beginningless lives. So it's huge. And having become mindful of that kindness and really meditated on that and our dependence, and as we said yesterday, you know, even the spiritual path isn't, you know, we don't do that on our own, do we? We do it in dependence of other beings. So look at that great kindness, the opportunities they give us to practice. And on the basis of our compassion for other beings, you know, it's not on its own. It's not being developed just within our own heart. It depends on these beings. So we've got a lot to be grateful for. So we really recollect this kindness in the second point. And in the third point, we start to think about repaying that kindness. Now, we know if a friend has been very nice to us, we want to give them something, we want to do something for them. That's very easy with friends because friends are nice to us. But what about our enemies, you know? Would we feel the same? Probably not at this point. But when we develop the equanimity, we realise that enemy can be friend, you know, tomorrow, or, you know, enemy was friend in the last lifetime, that the very soft fluctuating states, temporary states, we fix a label because, you know, that person wasn't very nice to us. And suddenly, you know, that label becomes locked in the drawer, not nice, but actually, you know, it's fluctuating all the time. And so really, with our equanimity, we begin to understand that all beings, whether they're nice or not nice to us at this moment in time, at one point in time. And if they haven't helped us, they're helping other beings who are, you know, connected to us as well. And especially to me, because, you know, without them, how have I been able to develop some peace of mind and travel on this spiritual path? So, wow, you know, what a lot of kindness. And a feeling starts to grow that I'd really like to give something back. I'd really like to repay that kindness. And that's where we start to generate love, which is the cause of body chitta. But we start to develop it for all beings. You know, okay, so you're not being very nice to me at the moment, but I know you just want to be happy like I do, and you equally don't want to suffer. So, you know, okay, just at this point in time, things aren't going well between us, but, you know, you could have been my very, very best friend and can be in the future. So we drop all that sort of that story and go to the heart of all beings, that we are all equal. We all want the same things. And so we train in that equanimity. And that equanimity, not only does it free us from our own delusions, a lot of them, gives us a lot more peace of mind, of course it does, that gives us the basis for the compassion. So the next step is bodhicitta compassion. And it starts, you know, in a small way, and we generate it by thinking of all beings in these previous meditations. It all builds towards generating compassion. And very much, you know, what we do in the sutra, when we listen to the Dalai Lama, we listen to the logic of why it's logical to be compassionate. certainly in this earth system, we see the results of selfish actions. Look at our environment. It's the result of our selfish mind. You know, it's nothing else. But we also see the results of compassion in action. The NHS is just, and what has happened in all health caring institutions during this COVID terrible COVID time, just overwhelms me, because I just think that is selfless love manifesting itself all, you know, in all these beings. I mean, I know they're not realized beings, but they are manifesting selfless love. You know, they're prepared to go into work every day, and they could actually die from COVID if they get it. And many have. And I think that's such, it just shows the potential we have, you know, that's the potential we have. And if we can also work along with the wisdom side of that, we're off, you know, we're on the path to enlightenment. And, you know, talking about the effect, the bodhicitta, well, I think that's what we've been talking about. If we just look at what happens when selfless love happens around us, that's the best of bodhicitta. So I think there's not a lot more for me to say on that, because I've given you the points and a little bit about where the meditations go. It's a work in progress. They're very clear points, so I do encourage you to think about them and utilize them, because they're logical steps. They've been tried and tested, and they really have worked. We've seen the amazing beings that Buddhism has manifested, and it's due to that bodhicitta. Combined with the wisdom, knowing emptiness. So if we can work on that, and alongside it, we work on our view of reality, I think we're heading on the right tracks. We're going to do some breakout groups now. And the topics we'd like you to think about, three topics again. The first one being, can you see all beings as mothers, as being your mother, or have been your mother in all the countless lifetimes that we've experienced? Does that cause a blockage? Well, no, the first point we'll just leave. Can you see? Literally, can you relate to that? All sentient beings as being my mother. And then the second point is, do we have any difficulties with it? And does it help us, or does it actually not help us? Is it an obstacle? We need to sort that out now. Okay. And the third will be, or do you think there's other methods that would help, you know, to get us, you know, to this this point, that would help us develop this kind of compassion? And we're not talking the ordinary, normal compassion that we know we're already capable of. We're talking about this great compassion, which, you know, is huge. So we're going to pop you in your groups, and you've got 10 minutes to have a little talk about this, discuss it. And again, if you could just choose one person to come back and give us some feedback on it, and let's all have a little chat about this, because this is a big part of our training. So let's enjoy just exploring it and see where we go with it. Okay. We'll go into breakout groups, please, Wendy.
Thank you. 3, 2, 1, here we go.
Okay, welcome back. Hope you had good discussions. And who would like to start with the feedback to the group? You know, this is for all of us to share. It's for all our benefit. Do you want to put a hand up?
Craig's doing it.
Right, Craig, I think it's over.
I'll tell you why, and then I'll shut up, because you know where I'm coming from.
Okay. No pressure there, Craig.
Yeah, I was nominated yesterday as well. So, yeah, we talked about, can you see all beings as your mother?
Yeah.
I think the answer was yes. We didn't actually talk about that particular point too much. We had a lot to say about the second point. Do you find it difficult? And we were saying, which I have not sort of speaking for Gabrielle as well, but that we both have difficult relationships with our mothers. So it can be quite an obstacle, you know, because, and we were saying that it's with the mother particularly, it's very personal. You know, people who fall short in everyday life, you know, do frustrate us and cause us difficult. But with the mother, they have personally let us down, yes. You know, and you know, and it's very deeply personal. There's the ego for me. Yeah. And sometimes they, you know, and we were saying this sort of, a stigma, stigma is the right word, around having difficult feelings towards your mother. It's like you have to love them, and you know, to have maybe quite difficult, maybe you even hate them. You know, some people, they've really had very difficult, you know, and that's almost like you feel guilty for not for feeling that, you know. So having permission, we were talking about having permission to have those feelings, that can be quite liberating. And maybe you have to do that first. You have to go through that. We were talking about you were saying yesterday about the person who's caused you most difficulty can be your greatest teacher. And showing us how not to behave, showing us how to do things differently. But taking it a bit further, we talked about actually, if we can forgive and be accepting and passionate towards the person who's caused us the most, who is the most difficult relationship that we possibly have in our life, might be the mother, then we can do it for anyone. So they could be really good teacher, but that's difficult to get to that. And then we talked about, is there any other ways that could be effective? And saying, you know, it doesn't just necessarily mean your mother. I personally like to think my mother, everyone has been my mother, my grandmother, my best friend. We've had all different relationships. And also the other way, I have been their mother. So you might have been the person who's caused suffering, but also been kind and been all things to every, you know. I hope that kind of covers it. There's a lot to say, isn't there?
Yeah, you really went for it. Well done. First thing I'd say is what an opportunity you guys have got with your mother.
Yeah.
Brilliant. And in the end, you might say, I'm so grateful to you. And that's, you know, remember when we were saying yesterday that high goes low, you know, enemy becomes friend, you know, it just stops being so fixed. And I'm sorry that in this, you know, present lifetime, you have that experience, but you can transform it. And this is what Lama Zopa talks about a lot, you know, transforming problems into the path. So there you have it. You have the big opportunity. But I'm glad you also explored, you saw the efficacy of it and, you know, exploring that. And I think you have been actually given an opportunity. So don't, unless it causes you pain, I don't think you should run away from that. But in the meantime, you can just work on, you know, what we're talking about. It's actually the energy. It's, you know, we label all these people because of how they are this and that time. But it's the energy of compassion we're talking about, selfless love, in essence. Mm. And you can see that in the way a mother defends the child. And I always remember when we were studying it in at one time when I was studying, and someone posted this amazing video of a squirrel, tiny little animal, and it was actually up pinching from a nut feeder, but its baby was down at the on the ground, and I can't remember, was it a cat or something came and threatened the baby. I have never seen such ferocity, you know. And that selfless love, you know, there was nothing going to harm that child. And I think if we can expand ourselves to that, it really helps. Mm. Okay, thank you. So from our other group.
That's me, Lou.
Welcome.
Yeah, so we also have, I think, about the methods quite a bit, and also, you know, the difficulty part of it, because I think conceptually it's easier to accept this idea, but, you know, practically it takes, yeah, there is a struggle, obviously, and, you know, you might not struggle with seeing your mother if you have good relationship with her and transpire it, but when you have other close members of the family equally close, like your father or your brother, and it still requires quite a bit of work and in trying to lay this idea over in practice to every single being that you are encountering in your life, and generally think about it as as wide as you can think about it.
Yeah.
But and we were talking about, you know, that it takes time, that, you know, you need to work on yourself with your mind, it takes time to work this out as well. So maybe it's also important to have, to be patient with that. So it's not happening all the time, and perseverance and patience with trying to come to terms with this is also, I guess, quite important.
Yeah.
And then we talked about the methods, and that, you know, that idea, what can help with that is again, something that we have discussed earlier, yesterday, and seeing beings as all wanting to be free of suffering and looking for happiness and meaning in life. And if we, yeah, if we apply this as antidotes to the type of negative experiences or things that, feelings that we hold throughout, you know, towards others, that could help. And then I shared another method that I found quite helpful was seeing people, it's basically if you're conceptually adopting this idea of, you know, seeing others as your mother and your most precious sentient beings and having that, developing that loving connection with them, then having ongoing relationship and letting go any conflicts that you already have and you can let go at the moment. So dealing with clearing what you can do immediately, as in like in your immediate past or current situation, is quite helpful, because then it means that you don't accumulate.
Yes.
And you at least can already try not to store more of the negativity. So if you keep going with the intention to let go anything new that builds up, it's already helpful. And one of the ways of doing this could be also as a technique where you can, if you feel that you are, you have attention or you have negativity towards someone as well, is to say for, so, you know, to define, say, a period of like a week or so or even more, and then write, and when writing, think, you know, really kind of try to live through the words that you are writing. And basically, you know, you can do it 4 or 5 times a day so that it becomes intense and kind of like a whole process, quite intense process. And you're basically saying that I forgive you, and I, for whatever you have done, I accept that you have done this, or you know, that's what you were thinking. And I let go with love, and you are free, and I am free, and it's a wonderful thing. So if you do it, if you do whatever phrase you want to adopt, but something along those lines, and if you do it very intensively for 4 or 5 times in a day, thinking about it, and do it throughout a certain time, then it intensifies and it actually builds up that opportunity for you to actually let go.
Yeah. And how would you feel having worked, say, for a week with someone like that, some situation like that, and at the week, end of the week, you felt so much more peaceful, you felt quite pleased that, you know, you hadn't reacted. How would you feel towards that person, do you think?
I've done it recently, actually. Okay. And my relationship with that person have improved. We are on the way of actually, I guess, becoming friends again, in a sense, you know, in that conventional sense. So it was a period where I couldn't connect with her as much as I was before.
Mm-hmm.
And I did that, and it did help. It felt to see, to be more open. So basically, to open back the vulnerability a bit again, because I think what happens a lot, you know, if you especially if you have some deep connection with someone, and mm-hmm. then some, you know, some situation hurts it, you come into a shell, you guard it. Mm-hmm. And then it takes time for you to really open that vulnerability again. So to actually get exposed again. Mm-hmm. And so that technique was very helpful in actually doing that, in just trying to say, okay, well, that's okay, you know, to maybe not to the very, you know, I learned my lessons, I know now things that I should be aware of, but it doesn't mean that I want to treat this person differently. It just need to be, it's just experience that I learned through a relationship, but I can be as open and as, yeah, as kind of happy talking to her as I was before.
Well, that's wonderful to share that. And I think your point about, well, at least not adding to it. I think that's a great place for us all to get to. You know, if we're having difficult situations, to just expand out into those sorts. Well, you know, maybe in another situation, another lifetime, I wasn't so nice, you know, and so on. You know, the meditations, you've an idea of them. But at least I'm not going to add, you know, more negative karma to this. And that's in a way how Pema Chodron teaches us is to, yeah, you know, life has got lots of difficult situations. Just because we're practicing Dharma doesn't mean to say they all go away and everything's lovely. And, you know, that's not samsara. It's just totally unreal if we think that's going to happen. But to be able to, she just says, sit with it. You can't do anything about it. Just sit with it. You know, when we were in the meditations and we were saying, okay, you know, these thoughts come up, but instead of reaching out and getting involved in them, shall we just look at them? Just for a few moments, shall we just look at them and see them as they are, just coming and going, you know? And I think that's a bit how you then bring that into your everyday experience, that, yeah, when you have difficult situations, instead of rushing in and reacting, you start to just sit back a moment, you know, and realize that you don't have to add to it and get involved in all this. So really great. And I love the way, you know, you suggested that, you know, you can actually formulate this. And then what I was going to say is, at the end of this, you're going to be grateful. You're going to be grateful to that person who actually put you through all that and made you realize just how insubstantial all these labels are that we place on people. So wonderful. Very good for us all to share. And the other point is the equanimity, which we've been building up, you know, with this base of equalizing, exchanging. The Dalai Lama just says it all the time, you know, we all want happiness. We all don't want to suffer. And we can apply that not just to all the people around us, when we see the ants walking across the patio, when a wasp is annoying us, you know, there's just endless opportunities to practice that equanimity. And we need to build that up, you know, because we're always going to get situations where things are difficult with beings around us. You know, I sometimes think that, yeah, maybe it is easier, like Shantideva and all these other wonderful meditators, to go off into the forest, you know, because you don't have to deal with the difficulties. You know, beings can be very difficult, but then when we try and transform that and see, well, you know, they're also amazing opportunities for me to get beyond that and not keep adding to this samsaric cycling of suffering, which is really just built up on a delusion that everything's fixed. And once you're an enemy, that's it, you're an enemy, you know. And once you're this, you're this, and that's it, you know. And that's what we do in Tantra. We loosen all that, all those fixed ideas, all those appearances. So really great discussions. Thank you very much. good to share it, isn't it? I think that's what's helpful about groups and feedback. We're going to have a little break now for 10 minutes and then we'll do the long sadhana together. Okay. Thank you very, very much. Have a nice little cup of juice, water, coffee, tea, whatever. See you soon.
Yes, I'm here.
Thank you. Okay.
Go for it. 3, 2, 1.
Okay, welcome back. And for our next session, we're going to do the long sadhana. I thought just before we start that, I'd just go over the symbolism of chenrezig. You probably know all these things, but he holds his hands together at the heart with a jewel, which is a wish-fulfilling jewel. And in your visualization, it's a wonderful place to place your focus, you know, that wish-fulfilling jewel, which is really the essence of bodhicitta, shining out from the heart. And then he's holding a rosary in his right hand. And that symbolizes the activities, the endless activities of the bodhisattva working for sentient beings, you know, like the mala, endlessly going round, endless activities for the benefit of sentient beings. And then in his left hand, he holds a lotus, which symbolizes the wisdom. And of course the lotus, as we know, grows out of the mud. So out of all this mayhem and chaos of samsaric cycling, we could, you know, the analogy is that is the mud, is this wisdom, you know. It just is able to arise from all this suffering, all this mud, really. And those two are the two methods, the two wings, and compassion and wisdom. And also he has an antelope over his shoulder, over his left shoulder. It's not so clear in this picture, but it is actually there in the blue. And the antelope signifies mother love, really, because the antelope is considered to be very, very kind to its young. And that's why we have the antelope draped over his shoulder. And just thinking about the visualization of the mantra as well, we can really make it rich if we think of it like a jewel, you know, its meaning, jewel in the lotus, wisdom and compassion combined and non-dual. So when we visualize the mantra, if we just go right into the center of there, with the Hri, and with that very strong feeling, we beam that out through the mantra syllables. So, you know, the clarity of the mantra syllables will come with the practice. Padmasambhava's advice for Tantra visualization, if you want to get the deity clear, he said, just sit in front of a picture of the deity for a few days and you will get, you know, some clarity. So it's just that practice thing. But at the beginning, we need to give it heart. And actually, in the beginning and in the end, we need to give it heart. So really, if you've got that feeling, that sincerity in the center of that heart space, going out through those symbols, really, really don't worry about how sharp the the visualization is. And sometimes you'll have it really, really sharp and in focus, and don't get excited about that either, because that's, you know, those are just signs. We just keep going with it, you know, and keep going from our heart. As I said yesterday, lots of imagination, and really the function of Tantra is to shake up ordinary appearances, so that ordinary appearances, which are quite delusional, they're not really, and we begin to see this, appearances are not really as they are, not the reality. The function of Tantra practice is to dispel ordinary appearance. That's in all the texts. So that's what we're doing. So the more imagination we can use, the more we use our mental gymnastics to move around from image to image. You know, the sadhanas, as you move on in Tantra, become unbelievable, the gymnastics. Fantastic for the concentration, but, you know, really amazing for just letting go of ordinary appearances. So we keep that in mind. And of course, the main thing we want to keep in mind, underlying it all, is the understanding of emptiness. Just as much as we have is enough, you know, because we're going to be developing that on the path. But an underlying awareness that all existence, including the deities and the visualizations and everything we're doing in this room, are completely empty of any existence from their own side. They're all dependent arisings. And we can think of it as just bundles of dependent arisings, all empty from self-existence, inherent existence, just as this practice is. And we, the ones who are practicing it, all the actions we do in the practice, and the recipients of the practice. And as long as we keep that, we'll be safe. Otherwise, we'll build up stories that aren't true, and it'll become dogma. And it won't change anything in your mind. Okay. So now, if you've got a nice, comfortable sitting position, I want you just to take your mind onto the breath again, and just gently, not deep breaths, just rest the mind on the in and out breath going through the nostrils. And then just start to take a fuller breath. And create the space in which we're going to do the practice. Spend a few moments on that. I'll make the motivation while you're in that space. So we motivate with a strong, strong feeling that we want to benefit all sentient beings, including ourselves. We don't leave ourselves out of this. And the way we're going to do that is to make a connection, a strong connection with Avalokiteshvara. And the way we will do that is through the Living Master, His Holiness, the Dalai Lama. And if we do have a living guru or connection already, I mean, in this practice, we are actually working, you know, with His Holiness. But we can imagine all our gurus around the head of the Dalai Lama. We can feel their presence as well. So we are connecting with them at the same time. And so we'll begin by setting up the refuge field, just the one we're usually, that we use and are accustomed to, having the three elements, Buddha, Shakyamuni, the Dharma text. The Sangha or the lineage masters that have handed down the Dharma through the precious texts. And then the teachers, all our teachers in this life that we have met. Going right back to our childhood, you know, people who've really imparted something quite wonderful to us, helped us, but especially our teachers in the Dharma, in the gurus. And then around us, we place all the sentient beings in the form of human being, because that's the form we need to reach enlightenment from all realms. So this can be as vast as possible. Knowing that some are our friends, our family around us. Some of us at the moment are labelled enemy. They're also around us. And the trillions who we don't know. And they're all equal. Wanting to happiness, not wanting to suffer. So with this in our heart, we take refuge. To the Guru, I go for refuge. To the Buddha, I go for refuge. To the Dharma, I go for refuge. To the Sangha, I go for refuge. To the Guru, I go for refuge. To the Buddha, I go for refuge. To the Dharma, I go for refuge. To the Sangha, I go for refuge. To the Guru, I go for refuge. To the Buddha, I go for refuge. To the Dharma, I go for refuge. To the Sangha, I go for refuge. And we feel the refuge field respond to this. This heartfelt refuge prayer coming from all the sentient beings. And they cascade blessings down upon every single sentient being, including myself. And then we generate bodhicitta from our hearts. I go for refuge until I am enlightened to the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Supreme Assembly. By the merit from giving and other perfections, may I become a Buddha to benefit all sentient beings. I go for refuge until I am enlightened to the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Supreme Assembly. By the merit from giving and other perfections, may I become a Buddha to benefit all sentient beings. I go for refuge until I am enlightened to the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Supreme Assembly. By the merit from giving and other perfections, may I become a Buddha to benefit all sentient beings. So we send that thought out, declaring ourselves to the refuge field and to all beings, our intention. And then the four immeasurable thoughts. May all sentient beings have happiness and the causes of happiness. May all sentient beings be free from suffering and the causes of suffering. May all sentient beings be inseparable from the happiness that is free from suffering. May all sentient beings abide in equanimity, free from desire for friends and hatred for enemies. May all sentient beings have happiness and the causes of happiness. May all sentient beings be free from suffering and the causes of suffering. May all sentient beings be inseparable from the happiness that is free from suffering. And may all sentient beings abide in equanimity, free from desire and hatred for enemies. May all sentient beings have happiness and the causes of happiness. May all sentient beings be free from suffering and the causes of suffering. May all sentient beings be inseparable from the happiness that is free from suffering. May all sentient beings abide in equanimity, free from desire for friends and hatred for enemies. And then we purify the place that we're going to practice in, but we include all realms. Everywhere may the ground be pure, free of the roughness of pebbles and so forth. May it be in the nature of lapis lazuli and as smooth as the palm of one's hand. And blessing the offerings, we start to set up the visualization of the offerings above our heads. May human and divine offerings, actually arranged and mentally created, the clouds of finest Samantabhadra offerings fill the entire space with clouds. So we set that up above our head. Make it as vast as we can. Thinking of our gratitude for the Dharma. Wanting to repay it, we make the mental visualizations of boundless, boundless offerings, knowing that the giver, the action, and the receiver are empty, the three bases. We hold that visualization as we say the offering cloud mantra three times. Om Namo Bhagavati Patra Sara Pramadana Tathagataya Hate Samyaksam Buddhaya Tayata Om Bhadri Bhadri Maha Bhadri Maha Teja Bhadri Maha Bidya Bhadri Maha Bodhi Chita Bhadri Maha Bodhi Manto Pasankramana Bhadri Sawakama Abharana Vishudana Bhadri Soha. Om Namo Bhagavati Vajrasara Bhamadana Tathagataya Ahate Samyaksam Buddhaya Dayata Om Bhadri Bhadri Maha Bhadri Maha Teja Bhadri Maha Bidya Bhadri Maha Bodhi Chita Bhadri Maha Bodhi Mandu Pasankramana Bhadri Sawakama Abharana Biju Dana Bhadri Soha. Om Namo Bhagavati Vajrasara Bhamadana Tathagataya Ahate Samyaksam Buddhaya Dayata Om Bhadri Bhadri Maha Mahateja Bhadri Mahabidu Bhadri Mahabodhi Chita Bhadri Mahabodhi Mandam Pasankramana Bhadri Sawakama Abharana Vishudana Vidri Bhadra Soha. Keep offering up that visualization by the power and truth of the three rare sublime ones, the blessings of all the Buddhas and the Bodhisattvas, the great wealth of the completed two collections, and the sphere of Phenomena. Being pure and inconceivable. May these piles of clouds of offerings arise through transformation by the Bodhisattvas, Arya Samantabhadra, Manjushri, and so forth, unimaginable, inexhaustible, equaling the sky, arise. And in the eyes of the Buddhas and the Bodhisattvas of the ten directions, be received. So really feel this is happening. more joy. And then we begin the main practice. And there's no need to read this, so I will lead you through this. And we start with just really resting in emptiness, the basis of the practice. So in the space of the Dharmakaya, a great spontaneous bliss. So the Dharmakaya is that empty, that emptiness. So just opening your mind into that spacious place. Letting all the thoughts just settle like the sediment in water. Allowing that space that we can practice in. No boundaries. Blissful. And in that space, anything can arise. So we start to set up the visualizations. In the midst of billowing clouds of magnificent offerings, upon a sparkling jewel throne supported by 8 snow lions, on a seat composed of a lotus in bloom, the sun and the moon. So we imagine that above our heads. We just get a feeling of that. Sits supreme, exalted Avalokiteshvara, great treasure of compassion, assuming the form of a monk, wearing saffron-coloured robes. O my Vajradhara master, having all 3 ways, holy Losang Tenzin Gyatso. So really feel his presence on the throne, on a lotus, the sun and moon disc. Feel he's smiling down, present in the room, ready to hear our prayers. Pouring compassion out of every pore of his light body. And then we add a little bit of detail. Endowed with a glowing, fair complexion and a radiant, smiling face, your right hand at your heart in a gesture expounding the Dharma, holds the stem of 1 white lotus that supports a book and a sword. Your left hand, resting in meditative pose, holds a 1,000-spoked wheel. You are clothed in the 3 saffron robes of a monk and are crowned with the pointed golden hat of a pandit. So now you just try and fill in some of those details, and maybe you just see one of those details clearly, but just feel the presence of His Holiness. And just sharpen up any of the details into focus that you can, but not grasping. Didn't come and go. Sometimes it's soft focus, sometimes it sharpens, but just allowing it to be as it is, remaining aware. Your aggregates, sensory spheres, senses, objects, and your limbs are a mandala complete with the 5 Buddhas and their consorts. Male and female bodhisattvas and the wrathful protectors. You are encircled by a halo of five brilliant colors. So really feel that aura around this holiness above your head in this room. My master is seated in full Vajra posture, sending out a network of cloud-like self-emanations to tame the mind of all sentient beings. So just see him sending out those compassionate rays in all directions to all beings. Including yourself. Within his heart sits Avalokiteshvara, a wisdom being. So you draw yourself just a little bit more into the center of that visualization, into the heart space of his holiness. And you can place a pearl of light there that expands into Chenrezig. With one face, four arms, his upper two hands are placed together. His lower two hands hold a crystal rosary and white lotus. He is adorned with jeweled ornaments and heavenly raiment. Over his left shoulder, an antelope skin is draped. And cross-legged, he is seated on a silver moon and a lotus. So, just entering into that heart space of his holiness and feeling that Chenrezig is really there, and just visualizing his beautiful image. And then we draw in even more concentration and try to go to the heart of Avalokiteshvara, who is in the heart of his holiness, the Dalai Lama. The white syllable Hri, a concentration being at his heart, emits brilliant coloured light in all the 10 directions. And try and get a feel of this and a slight focus on this. The body is light. The light beams just beaming out through the body of His Holiness from that centre, that heart centre, from the centre of Avalokiteshvara's heart. And it just beams out without any obstructions in all directions, to all beings, including myself. On my master's brow is a white arm, within his throat a red R, and at his heart a blue hum, from which many lights shine out in myriad directions. So we just draw into focus now hum, the blue hum, and slightly soft focus. Avalokiteshvara, who is still present in the heart space. The hum at the heart of the Dalai Lama, shining out, inviting the three jewels of refuge to dissolve into him, transforming into the collected essence of the objects of refuge. So there we have the visualization, and we keep that present, or keeping an awareness present. The visualization above our heads as we say the seven limb prayer. Your liberating body is fully adorned with all the signs of a Buddha. Your melodious speech, complete with all 60 rhythms, flows without hesitation. Your vast, profound mind, filled with wisdom and compassion, is beyond all conception. I prostrate the wheel of these three secret adornments of your body, speech, and mind. Material offerings of my own and of others, the actual objects and those that I visualize, body and wealth and all virtues amassed throughout the three times, I offer to you upon visualized oceans of clouds like Samantha Badra's offerings. Vast as the universe. We make confession to these beings. My mind being oppressed by the stifling ignorance, darkness of ignorance, I have done many wrongs against reason and vows. Whatever mistakes I have made in the past, with a deep sense of regret, I pledge never to repeat them, and without reservation, I confess everything to you within the unobservable, that is emptiness. So really just heartfelt feeling of regret. As long as we have this, this is the antidote to, you know, the complete downfalls of non-virtue. So we really regret these actions. We will try not to keep on doing them. We know the suffering it causes. We'll try to apply the antidotes, the remedy. And we'll take heartfelt refuge to protect us on our path. And then rejoicing, from the depths of my heart, I rejoice in the enlightening deeds of the sublime masters and in the virtuous actions, past, present, and future, performed by myself and others, and by ordinary and exalted people of the three sacred traditions. I request you to awaken every living being from the sleep of ordinary and instinctive defilements with the divine music of the Dharma's pure truth, resounding with the melody of profoundness and peace and in accordance with the disposition of your various disciples. I entreat you to firmly establish your feet upon the indestructible Vajra throne in the indissoluble state of Avam, until every sentient being gains the calm breath of joy in the state of final realization, unfettered by the extremes of worldliness and tranquil liberation. I dedicate fully my virtuous actions of all the three times, so that I may receive continuous care from a master and attain full enlightenment for the benefit of all, through accomplishing my prayers, the supreme deed of Samantha Badra. And then we make the mandala offering. This ground, anointed with perfume and strewn with flowers, adorned with Mount Meru, four continents, the sun and the moon, I imagine this as a Buddha field and offer it. May all living beings enjoy this pure land. This offering I make, the precious jeweled mandala, the moon together with other pure offerings and wealth, and the virtues we have collected through the three times with our body, speech, and mind. We offer all of this. O my masters, my yidams, and the three precious jewels, I offer all to you with unwavering faith, accepting these out of your boundless compassion. Send forth to me waves of your inspiring strength. So really feel those blessings pouring down. Idam Guru Ratna Mandalakam Niriyatayami. And then drawing back into the visualization, just bringing the focus. Presence has been there all along, but we just refresh the visualization, then go into the heart of Avalokiteshvara, who is in the heart of His Holiness. From the Hri in the heart of Avalokiteshvara, seated in the heart of my Venerable Master, flow streams of nectar and rays of five colors, penetrating the crown of my head, eliminating all obscurations, endowing me with both common and exclusive powerful attainments. So we'll keep the visualization there as we recite the mantra, which we'll do quietly 21 times. I'll set you off. This is the mantra of His Holiness the Dalai Lama. So just staying with the visualization as we recite the mantra. Oma Guru Vajradhara Bhadra Ragas Mantra Sri Bhajindra Sumati Janashasana Dara Samudra Sri Bhadra Sawa Siddhi Hum Hum Om Guru Vajradhara Bhadra Ragas Mantra Sri Bhajindra Sumati Janashasana Dara Samudra Sri Bhadra Sawa Siddhi Hum. Om Al Guru Vajradhara Bhadra Ragat Mantra Sri Bhajindra Sumati Janasasana Dara Samudra Sri Bhadra Salasiddhi Hom Hom. Just staying with the visualization present above our heads, we request to actualize the graduated path. Bestow on me your blessings to be devoted to my master with the purest thoughts and actions, gaining confidence that you, compassionate Holy Master, are the basis of temporary and everlasting bliss, for you elucidate the true path free from all deception and embody the totality of refuges past number. Bestow on me your blessings to live a life of Dharma undistracted by the illusory preoccupations of this life. For well I know that these leisures and endowments can never be surpassed by countless treasures of vast wealth, and that this precious form, once attained, cannot endure, for at any moment of time it may easily be destroyed. Bestow on me your blessings to cease actions of non-virtue and accomplish wholesome deeds by being always mindful of the causes and effects from kind and harmful acts, while revering the three precious jewels as the ultimate source of refuge and the most trustworthy protection from the unendurable fears of unfortunate rebirth states. Bestow on me your blessings to practice the three higher trainings, motivated by firm renunciation gained from clear comprehension that even the prosperity of the Lord of the Devas is merely a deception, like a siren's alluring spell, bestow on me your blessings to master the oceans of practice, cultivating immediately the supreme enlightened motivation by reflecting on the predicament of all mother sentient beings who have nourished me with kindness from beginningless time and now are tortured while ensnared within one extreme or other, either on the wheel of suffering or in tranquil liberation. Bestow on me your blessings to generate the yoga combining mental quiescence with penetrative insight, in which the 100,000-fold splendor of voidness, forever free from both extremes, reflects without obstruction in the clear mirror of the immutable meditation, the clear light mind. Bestow on me your blessings to observe in strict accordance all the vows and words of honor that form the root of powerful attainment, having entered through the gate of extremely profound Tantra, by the kindness of my all-proficient master, bestow on me your blessings to attain within this lifetime the blissful great seal of the union of body and wisdom, through severing completely my all-creating karmic energy with wisdom's sharp sword of the non-duality of bliss and voidness. So now we come back to sharpen up the visualization above our heads, so the crown of our heads. And having made requests in this way for the development in our mind stream of the entire paths of Sutra and Tantra, we merge with the spiritual master. My Supreme Master, requested in this way, now blissfully descends through the crown of my head and dissolves in the indestructible point. So really open up the crown and the central channel in your subtle body to accept and receive gladly, joyfully His Holiness, Avalokiteshvara, at His heart. Descend. And go right down to your heart chakra. At the center of my eight-petaled heart. And now my master re-emerges on a moon and lotus, and in his heart sits Avalokiteshvara. Just feel this in the space of your heart. And within the heart of Avalokiteshvara is the free soul, taking the focus more and more into the central part of this visualization. The three encircled by a rosary of the six-syllable mantra. Eliminating all obstacles and every disease. Nectars flow out, light flowing out from the mantra. And expanding my knowledge of the scriptural and insight teachings of the Buddha, thus I receive the entire blessings of the victorious ones, teachings of the Buddhas and their children. So the light expands out from the free, out through the pores of the visualizations, out through the pores of your subtle body, expanding out, and then returning as blessings from all the Buddhas. Just do that for a couple of moments. Feel the blessings pouring back in. And then expanding all those blessings out from the free right at the center of your visualization. Touching all the Buddhas. Drawing back their blessings right into the heart of Avalokiteshvara, who is at the heart of his Dalai Lama, his holiness, who is at your heart. Radiant lights again shine forth to cleanse away defects from all beings and their environments. So now we're just expanding that. Having received all these blessings, we expand the light rays from the free out to all sentient beings in all realms. And feel them transformed. In this way, I attain the supreme yogic state, transforming every appearance, sound, and thought into the three secret ways of the exalted ones. So now we're going to recite the Om Mani Padme Hum mantra. We'll do a full mala. And just staying with that wonderful visualization, that really soft expansion of light goes from the mantra, which is set up at the heart of Avalokiteshvara, around the Hri, on the moon seat. And as we recite the mantra, just feel the rays of the meaningful mantra beaming out to all beings. Om Mani Padme Hum, Om Mani Padme Hum, Om Mani Padme Hum. Om Mani Padme Hum, Om Mani Padme Hum, Om Mani Padme Hum. And then we recite the Vajrasattva mantra just to clear any mistakes, any errors we've made and in the ritual. And just feel a cleansing come down through all our subtle body, a presence of Vajrasattva. Om Vajrasattva Samaya Manopalaya Vajrasattva Denabhadishtu Dridame Bhavasutta Kaya Me Bhava Supakaya Me Bhava Anarakta Me Bhava Sava Siddhi Me Prayacha Sava Kama Sutra Me Shritam Shri and Kura Hung Ha 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 Ho Bhagavan Sava Tata Gata Vajra Mami Mantra Vajra Baha Maha Samaya Sapa Ahum Pe. Cleansing. And then we make the dedication and we share the benefits of the practice with all beings. In the glorious 100,000-fold radiance of the youthful moon of wholesome practice, from the blue jasmine garden, the victorious treasure mind's method of truth, May the seeds of explanation and accomplishment germinate and flower across this vast earth. May the ensuing auspiciousness beautify everything until the limit of the universe. By flying high above the three realms, the never-vanishing great jewel, banner of religious and secular rule, laden with millions of virtues and perfect accomplishments, may mirrored wishes for benefit and bliss pour down. Having banished afar the dark weight of this era's degeneration across the extent of the earth's sapphire held by a celestial maiden, may all living creatures overflow with spontaneous gaiety and joy in the significant encompassing brilliance of happiness and bliss. In short, O Protector, by the power of your affectionate care, may I never be parted from you throughout the rosaries of my life. May I proceed directly with an ease beyond effort unto the great city of unification, the all-powerful cosmic state itself. And we make the concluding auspicious verse. By the force of the immaculate compassion of the victorious ones and their children, may everything adverse be banished for eternity throughout the universe. May all favorable omens become increasingly auspicious, and may whatever is of virtue in the round of this existence or in tranquil liberation flourish and grow brighter like a moon waxing full. And we'll just do a prayer of dedication to seal the action. Like my Lama, the Buddha Bhagavan, who gave away at the time of the path with mighty courage, royalty, children, students, and everything, may I be able to utterly give away without regret. And may the supreme jewel, Bodhicitta, that has not arisen, arise and grow. May that which has arisen not diminish, but increase more and more. May the wisdom realizing emptiness that has not arisen, arise and grow. And may that which has arisen not diminish, but increase more and more. And then a prayer for the long life of His Holiness to complete our morning session. In the land encircled by snow mountains, you are the source of all happiness and good. All powerful Chenrezig, Tenzin Gyatso, please, please remain until samsara ends. So that completes our morning sessions. Thank you very, very much for all your hard work. And it's time for lunch tonight, now. Have a good break. Stay in the space. Remember what we've got in our hearts. We'll bring it out to anyone around you. Thank you very much.